When Edgar Degas proudly presented a portrait to his friend Edouard Manet, he couldn't have anticipated what would happen next. Sometime later, visiting Manet's studio, Degas discovered his painting had been slashed with a knife right through the face of Manet's wife, Suzanne. The culprit? Manet himself. Stunned, Degas took his damaged painting and left without saying goodbye, returning a small still life Manet had given him with a terse note, "Monsieur, I am returning your plums." This shocking act of violence between friends perfectly captures the volatile, complex relationships at the heart of artistic rivalry. Sebastian Smee's exploration of four transformative artistic relationships reveals that the most productive artistic rivalries aren't between sworn enemies, but between close friends magnetically drawn to each other. These relationships feature a peculiar combination of intimacy and ambivalence, making them inherently volatile and psychologically complex. Each pairing involves different temperaments at pivotal moments in their careers. Typically, one artist possesses an enviable fluency, while the other feels creatively stuck. Their encounters prove revelatory, opening new possibilities and ways of working that ultimately transform both artists' work. These relationships derive their power from psychological complexity, not mere admiration, but charged connections, where artists see in each other something to both aspire to and reject. This ambivalence creates productive friction, driving their greatest work. The relationships follow a pattern: urgent attraction, followed by ambivalence, and finally, independence, the essential process of finding your voice. This search embodies the modern tension between desiring uniqueness while craving recognition. Artists needed something from each other they couldn't provide themselves. Their relationships created spaces to simultaneously learn from and push against another powerful creative force, more productive than either pure emulation or isolation. In 1952, Lucian Freud painted an intimate portrait of Francis Bacon on copper, a pocket-sized work that disappeared from a German museum in 1988 and symbolized the most fertile relationship in 20th century British art. Their 1945 meeting sparked an immediate connection: Freud with his alert, shy, yet theatrical manner, Bacon with his blunt, devastating charm. After meeting, they began seeing each other almost daily, though their relationship would dissolve 3 decades later. Their approaches perfectly complemented each other. Freud worked methodically, observing subjects over extended periods. Bacon was volcanic and intuitive, often creating something really extraordinary in a single day, while destroying works he deemed inadequate. He described his painting as a series of accidents mounting on top of each other, an approach that electrified the methodical Freud. Bacon's influence transformed Freud's work. "I think that Francis's way of painting freely helped me feel more daring." Freud abandoned his linear style, stopped drawing entirely for years, and loosened his paintwork. While maintaining his deliberate process, he embraced chance and risk, focusing more on flesh than eyes, and treating the body as a landscape. The slashed portrait incident revealed fundamental tensions between Manet and Degas. Despite their contrasting approaches, Degas, the disciplined draftsman following Ingres's advice to draw lines, young man, while Manet rebelled against academic constraints, they formed a deep connection that transformed both artists' work. Degas recognized Manet's prominence while benefiting from their association. Their families became intertwined, with Manet's son working at Degas' father's bank. Degas' portrait of Manet and Suzanne wasn't merely a marriage portrait, but a painting about music, reflecting his appreciation for Suzanne's musicianship. Manet's attack on the portrait likely stemmed from how Degas' analytical perspective clashed with his intuitive vision. Their friendship and rivalry persisted throughout the 1870s, with both addressing similar subjects competitively, but with decreasing tension. After Manet's death in 1883, Degas deeply mourned him. While Manet owned no works by Degas, Degas had collected an impressive array of Manet's works, 8 paintings, 14 drawings, and over 60 prints, revealed only after his death in 1917. In early 1906, Henri Matisse first visited Pablo Picasso's studio, launching one of art history's most significant relationships. Their contrast was striking. Short Picasso lived sparsely with his mistress, while bespectacled Matisse lived conventionally with his family across Paris. Days later, Matisse exhibited Le Bonheur de Vivre, a radiant Arcadian vision with saturated color and distorted proportions that bewildered viewers. Picasso, blindsided, abandoned his own Arcadian painting, knowing it would appear tame by comparison. Picasso responded by creating Les Demoiselles d'Avignon to establish dominance. Matisse remarked bitterly that Picasso had appropriated his ideas without understanding them. What truly bothered him was how the demoiselles seemed targeted directly at him, its aggressive composition opposing his focus on wholeness and calm. Despite their rivalry, the painters exchanged works in 1907. By 1913, Picasso had established himself as the avant-garde leader through Cubism. Rather than resisting, Matisse incorporated Cubist elements, reducing bright colors for darker tones while emphasizing angular geometry. This pattern of yielding, overcoming, and yielding again characterized their relationship, a subtle martial arts dance in the aesthetic realm. Outside the Cedar Tavern in Greenwich Village one night in the early 1950s, Willem de Kooning and Jackson Pollock sat on the curb passing a bottle, each insisting the other was the greatest painter in America, until Pollock passed out. Their relationship transcended mere rivalry. Pollock struggled with artistic limitations, while de Kooning faced the opposite challenge, relinquishing his technical mastery. Ironically, the less skilled Pollock helped the virtuoso de Kooning break free from expertise to discover originality. Inspired by Pollock, de Kooning began to cut loose. Though still using brushes at an easel, he embraced spontaneity, painting wet into wet, incorporating drips, and rotating his canvas like Pollock. Despite critics' competitive framing, they developed genuine mutual respect. After Pollock's 1956 death in a drunk driving accident, de Kooning was among the last to leave the funeral. Later, seeing Pollock's dogs, he declared, "I saw Jackson in his grave, and he's dead. It's over. I'm number one." Yet moments later, he was found weeping in the garden, a final testament to their complicated bond. What emerges most powerfully from these stories is the paradoxical nature of artistic influence. Creative breakthroughs often come not from isolation, but from deep engagement with another artist's vision, followed by a necessary separation. This pattern of attraction, absorption, and ultimate independence forms the backbone of artistic development. The most productive artistic relationships combine admiration with ambivalence. Freud was enthralled to Bacon's spontaneity while maintaining his commitment to patient observation. Degas absorbed Manet's modernity while rejecting his surface approach. Picasso appropriated Matisse's innovations while deliberately moving in an opposite direction. De Kooning embraced Pollock's freedom while preserving his connection to traditional skills. These rivalries reveal that creative breakthroughs emerge from the friction between different sensibilities. The greatest lesson is to engage deeply with influence, to find our voice by wrestling with others, absorbing what we need, and ultimately discovering what makes our vision unique. Art isn't just about individual genius, but about the complex web of relationships that shaped each artist's development.